When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Drew, buddy, it's such a pleasure to have you.
Yes. Thanks for having me. It's a real treat.
It is so good to see you. It's been far too long. We talk about you all the time and we miss you
much. I appreciate the accolades. I really miss you guys, I got to say. Nothing's been like it since.
It's true. It's really true.
No kidding, eh? Yeah. Unfortunately, that comes up in the show quite a bit. In the podcast quite a bit. We talk about how none of us really seem to have matched the experience that we had whilst we were on the show, which is a shame, but I guess a good thing at the same time.
Makes it unique.
Well, without further ado, welcome back to Return to the Shadows. We have on our show today a very, very special guest, someone who is near and dear to both of us and probably has seen far too much of our faces. Welcome our A-camera operator, Drew Potter.
Thank you very much. Never too much, got to say. You guys know how to make it all work. It's a lot of fun working with you. It was.
That's very sweet.
Thank you.
Before we dive into the sort of deeper stuff, why don't you tell us a little about who you are and what your job was on the show?
I'm Drew Potter. I was the A-camera operator on that series from season 2 and season 3 and the season finale as well. It's been 25 years as a camera operator, but also dabbling in other things. Once I get a little bored, I take to move on and change it up for a little while. And then I usually come back to operating because that's my first passion.
Amazing.
So how did you become a camera operator? What got you into this line of work? How did you get started? What was the original inspiration?
I saw Star Wars when I was 16, and it just blew me out of the water. And it was kind of visual effects I was attracted to. But ultimately, I live in Canada, and there are no big visual effects houses here. It was all in the U.S., and that wasn't really in the cards to move to the U.S. and start that. But I was still fascinated with the camera, and my dad had given me his camera, Stokes camera. I used to shoot a lot of little stills when I was just a kid. And then I got a Super 8 camera when I was a little older, around the 16-year age there, and played with that and editing and putting music to it and just having some fun with some friends, making little stories, little vignettes. And then I was in school and I was taking sort of a lot of math and science, and I was going to be, you know, a chiropractor or a pharmacist or something like that.
Yeah, something sensible and practical and, you know, reliable. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The parent pleasers.
Yes. Parent pleasers. That's right. And then the 11th hour, it was, I'm kind of interested in this film thing. Is there any film schools around? I remember talking to the guidance counselor about it. We got like 2 weeks left to get applications in. Yeah, there's still time. Mm-hmm. And he threw me a couple of schools that did it. Yeah. And I just dropped it at the last second. And I told my parents what I was doing. They're Well, we support you whatever you do.
That's so nice.
I know.
What a great thing for your parents to do. I feel like, unfortunately, I think actually now, like in the last sort of 5 years, it's become much more common for that to be the parents' reaction. Mm-hmm. Because it's so visual that you can see people succeeding in it. But I think, I mean, my parents were very supportive as well, but my school teachers definitely weren't of my career choice. There's a lot more trepidous of the concept of me going out on a whim and trying this. So it's really nice to hear that your parents supported you through that.
Mm-hmm. No, it's if it wasn't for their support, I wouldn't have made it. That's for sure. Because you need that kind of help finding accommodation, help paying for tuition, mm-hmm, things like that. So, and then I just kind of kept my focus at getting into camera and being a camera operator, perhaps possibly a director of photography one day was sort of the real goal. Mm-hmm. Once I finished college, I started working at an animation post-production house where we did a lot of graphics and maps and charts and credits for movies. So I kind of got the back end of it first and dealt with the lab and there was a problem. And it was just a small house. It was just two or three of us there. The boss and me and another guy. And that was a couple of years, sort of my PA years. That's sort of what it was. I was going to get into it and getting more involved with understanding how to get into a union or become a trainee. Mm-hmm. There's trainees programs for the camera departments and whatnot. So I sort of joined as a trainee and then slowly just started migrating my way through the system. Trainee for 2 years, second assistant for four, a focus puller for five, and then became a camera operator. It was just sort of, and the opportunities were just sort of unfolded themselves at the right time.
Yeah.
And it was just, I just took the chance.
It was meant to be.
As you have to. Yeah. It's interesting. I was just at a breakfast this morning with a producer friend of mine who did Vampire Academy with us all those years ago, Deepak. And he was talking about, he's such a go-getter entrepreneur, has his fingers in so many pies at any time. And I said, man, how do you keep yourself focused with all of this? And he says, you're gonna take every opportunity that's in front of you. You know, you get one of these, you get one life. If you're lucky, you live to 80. The first 10 years, you can't really do anything. The last 10 years, you probably won't be able to do anything. So you've got 60 years, 60 years to get something that you enjoy. And the three of us can all say that we've been very lucky and we do something that we enjoy every day. But you got to take those opportunities. You've got to take as many and as often as you can before, I mean, unless they break you, but I don't think any of us have been, maybe we've been close a couple of times, those long, long evenings, long Fridays that turn into Saturday mornings, but we're still powering through.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that's the fun of it.
And then I guess basically I was camera operating for a while, and then I had an opportunity on a TV series I worked on to do directing. So I got into directing world for, I guess, about 7 years. I did about 32, mm-hmm. no, about 40 hours of television.
Oh my gosh.
And then realized it was not my forte. It was just too stressful, a lot of anxiety associated with it, mm-hmm. a lot of politics. And yeah. I actually left the business after 25 years of being involved and did something completely different for like 5 or 6 years. And then Shadowhunters was my main return back to full-time work.
Wow.
So interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that about directing.
Yeah, it's a kind of
like straight from your mouth, but also sort of subconsciously, I think kind of knew, because you were always very good at translating for some of the directors who couldn't necessarily articulate exactly what they were saying. You know, it's private moments with you and I where it's like, this is what they're asking for. And I'm like, oh, I got it. Thank God you were there, Drew. Otherwise, I wouldn't have known.
Well, yeah. But that's something I always appreciated so much about you and about Glenn as well, is, and all of the camera teams on Shadowhunters, is that we had such a rapport between actors and camera department. And I fully credit you guys for teaching me how to make television on the technical side, because I didn't know what I was doing when we first started this show. And at least, you know, how to make a TV show technically and how to help and be a participant in the camera situation of it all. Mm-hmm. And you all were so kind to take the time to explain things to us and to translate and to allow us to work together instead of that sort of wall that sometimes exists between the cast and the camera.
Well, I've always been under the impression that if the performers understand what we're doing, And then they can resonate to that. They can, you know, okay, I'm over here. This is what it should be. It shouldn't be over. I'm not in the shadow over here. I'm in the light. This is how I see that now. All these little things. And the mark on the floor is sometimes important and sometimes not so important. And And you just have to let them know that so they can have a little less.
A very pointed
focus
note.
On that.
We literally said so that like 2 days ago. Yeah, like 2 days ago, we were talking about how, like, the most recent TV show I did, our B camera operator, Patrick, used to give me a lot of shit. He would look at me, we're in New York, and he'd look at me and go, "Hey, man, you see that mark on the floor? Yeah, it's not a fucking suggestion. That's where your feet should be." And I'd look down, and it's like 3 feet behind me, and I'm like, "Ah, dude, sorry."
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I apologize. I just can't get it.
It's all right,
you're busy doing other things, you know. It's complicated being on that side of the camera. There's no doubt about that. That's why I'm behind the camera.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
Well, yes and no.
No doubt, I mean, you would do an amazing job in front of the camera as well. I think the interesting thing is, who was it? It was either you or Glenn who was talking about an actor from like the 40s who used to do a look. So like, we as actors and camera people, people within the industry, you can always tell when an actor walks in and has a little look down to know exactly where your toes need to stop, because it's, you know, it's a tight moment, whatever it is. You just have a little, and it's a mark check, like that actor just did a mark check. They have a little look, and that's they landing right where they need to land. And
Spencer Tracy made that famous.
Spencer Tracy. Yeah, he used to come in and he would do the pensive like look. He would always start a scene. He's like, "I'm thinking about something. Something's going on." Would spot his mark and then go straight to it.
Yeah, he worked it in. He worked it in as part of his thing.
Brilliant.
Hey, you know what? Whatever works. If you can hit your mark and make it work, it's brilliant, I think.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's one of the things also that I appreciated so much about the show, is that we all got to be such a symbiotic system after a while. The directors would come into this situation, most of them at least, and see that and sort of trust you guys to kind of play jazz a little bit with some of the shots and with us, and find those moments that, you know, you can set up a camera in a point and try and catch a moment. But if you see something, because you know the way we move through a space and you kind of can predict the way that we're going to go about a scene after watching us for so long, you catch things that other people wouldn't, because we're kind of all on the same wavelength, as it were. And I think that added so much to the show. And there were so many moments watching the show back that I remember, oh yeah, that wasn't how it was planned. That was just Drew being creative. And
yes,
it added
true.
So much.
And that's, and directors, well, and having been a director and being parachuted into different sets, shows, you appreciate the crew's input, because it just makes you as a director look better. And it makes the actors feel more comfortable, because they're still in their still environment. And I'm not the guy coming in to, you know, change everything all of a sudden. and then what's going on here? And it's trying to keep it consistent with the other episodes. And you're always looking for help from the director of photography, for sure.
Well, it does. It becomes this, as Kat's saying, you know, we fall into this space. And we were very lucky on Shadowhunters. Maybe this, I think probably the large reason why we haven't found this again is that symbiosis, that level of fluidity that we had on a set, where we did all sort of get on, or at least at the very least understand each other, or understand the motivations behind whatever it is. I think having that that ability to flow through whatever the day is, no matter how hard it is, by relying on the people that we trust, is so important and so fundamental, and something that we found on, or I don't want to take words out of anyone's mouths, but I think we can all say we found something like that on Shadowhunters, which is really quite special.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah.
And speaking to that, so how did you end up in our shadow family? What brought you to this world?
Well, Mike McMurray, the director of photography, was aware that I was leaving my other concept of 7 years, which was I'm ready to come back to work now, because I had getting phone calls from people saying, you know, we miss you, where you been? And I would start doing dailies on different shows, just see camera in the back, and I kind of started remembering, this is what I love, is this coming right back to me very quickly, which is why my direction to begin with. So eventually Mike caught wind that I was, you know, back, you know, doing dailies and around, and then I just shut down what I had done in April. And I mean, like literally 3 weeks later, he gave me a phone call and says, I'm doing this fantasy show in August. Do you want to do it with me? Back the old team, back together again. And I said, of course, I'd be delighted to. And the next thing that was, next thing was, you know, 40 episodes over 2 years of of an actual
show. I had no idea what you were in for.
Exactly.
had no idea. And I had finally got a hold of what the show was called, and I tracked it down on the internet, and I could watch a few episodes and start to understand what it was about. And but, you know, the idea was it was going to be not that show, but darker and more adult, because adults were watching it, not the kids that it was really meant for in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
or the youth audience, I want to say. So when I have to say it was a slam when I came in, because I think working with Matt Hastings was an American gentleman that came out to direct, and he was a showrunner, and he did the first few episodes to kind of give us the look. And that was my thing, was, well, what's the style of this show? What's the look? I know you're changing it up, but, and Mike would say, well, we haven't really talked about that.
We didn't know.
We had no idea.
No, it was just this organic thing about how to shoot it. And yeah, it was going to be long lens cinematography. Okay. I understood that part of it, but you know, what else? And you know, well, it's going to be low. Well, of course, it's going to be low. It's, you know, dramatic, and it's fun as action. So, but Matt basically had his ideas, and I think he sort of imbued on me the first week of what he was thinking the show should be. And it was just him sort of training us to understand where you can go and push the limits. He was looking for something more stylized than just traditional TV, where everybody's center punched and they do their lines and you walk away. He wanted something that had a flair to it in a way. Don't take all the rules of composition. This is me interpreting now, going back. Don't take all the rules of composition and make it work. Push it. And I just embraced that, because I was just kind of, having done operating for so long, everybody wanted it so perfect in terms of television, in the center, slightly off. I could start pushing the sides. I could start trimming into eyebrows for close-ups that had, you know, a certain amount of energy to it, because the shot's just not quite right. But yet, but the scene is heightened, and it seemed to add to it visually what was going on. And the cutting was so quick that you never really got to hang on a shot that was maybe uncomfortable for some people to watch for a while, because you're somewhere else, right?
Now, let's discuss that a little more, because you and I had one particular problem in general. There was one shot that I couldn't get through, that I really struggled with at any point. And it's very common in TV, especially young adult TV. It's called a slow push-in. And it happens at the end. It happens at the end of like a scene where something fucking dramatic has happened or whatever. And Drew would give me a look like, we're going to do the slow push-in. And I'm like, okay, gonna do my best. Yep. And the camera, it normally on the dolly, like cut. So this entire giant piece of kit with three men on it, all of whom you trust, all of whom you want to impress, you know, they're a part of our team, starts slowly making its way towards your face. And you have to just hold whatever it was, wherever you were looking. And this, you know, 2 tons of equipment is sort of coming towards you slowly, slowly. And I still to this day struggle with it. I can't get over it.
Why does it's a bit make daunting. You laugh, Dom?
It is. Yeah, I think it's because it's daunting. I think there's a lot of like pressure with I don't know. But
because you know you're not going anywhere else. That's the moment. We're here. This is it.
Yeah. This is it. And absolutely.
Because before you maybe cut somewhere else, it'll be wide shot. Mm-hmm. There's other places to go, but this moment is right here, right now.
Yeah. So all it is.
I just always remember they would have to do them in series for you, Dom. They'd just be like, all right, we're going to do it, and then go back again.
There you go. The more we do this podcast, the more we've realized that Dom's not a very professional actor. Like, I think I've destroyed my career by doing this podcast.
I don't really recall you missing marks all the time. You talk about it, but I don't really recall that as being
really. That's because you guys are good at your job. That's what it is. Like, if I was out of focus, you'd pull out, or someone would trim the focus a little to sort of make
Mark,
it work.
Yeah, he would be on that.
Mark was so on top of it. He's like, okay, I'm just going to fix this.
There it is. Okay, now he's in focus. Fabulous. Yeah.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell, I'll get you caught up with The Seven every weekday. So follow The Seven right now.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
And then coming into Shadowhunters is a new thing for me. Even the camera team were people that I, well, Mark was my trainee, but maybe before he became a focus puller years ago. So I knew Mark. But most of the team I did not know that Mike had been working with for the last, seven or 8 years on different shows. So I'm like this new guy to them, and they're all new to me. And it was that first week was really rough. I do remember that day four, driving into that big boat on that August hot day going, Mike, if it wasn't for being surrounded by friends, because I did know everybody on some level, even the dolly grip, Tim, we went way back.
Yeah.
I probably would have quit because it was just so, it was such a wall. I wasn't up to that speed. I mean, having left another show, haven't done anything, you know, the year past, it was just a different environment completely. And now bang, slammed into this 14 hour days, commuting, just, it was just a real handful. It took a little while to get up to speed.
And we threw you in at the deep end as well. We didn't throw you in with like a nice warm-up episode where everyone was just on the beach fucking chilling out. Like we threw you into an episode where, like, jump on the top of a container ship. There's going to be an alarm that happens every now and then. Nobody knows what that means. So everyone just evacuate and then we'll get back on the ship whenever we can.
Don't worry about it. It'll be fine.
Remember that?
Sure.
And it turned out to be the phone ringing. It's so loud in the engine room that they had to, that's how loud the phone has to be. It was just like, even for us, it was chaos. And we had each other to rely on. We worked with each other for a year. So kudos to you. Because we, again, we've spoken about this in relation to actors more. It's daunting. Coming in halfway through something where people have set themselves up is really daunting. And then coming in to be such an integral piece of our storytelling process is even more daunting. So hats off to you, because that's really, it's really something, it's really an achievement you should feel very proud of.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That's a, and that was part of the reason why we wanted to have Glenn around on B camera, because it gave some sort of continuity in the camera department from season one to season two. And he's a very talented gentleman, and Mike has worked with him in the past. So it just seemed like the perfect fit to have Glenn, you know, continue to be there and be our continuity and ask him questions when we were sort of stumped on something, and he would clarify for us.
It really was amazing to watch all of you work together, and just the sort of collaboration and sharing of information and sort of everyone's artistic opinions and choices, but still trying to keep the consistency of the show. It taught me a lot. And just observing our crew work together and the collaboration and the sort of symbiosis that we all found, it really taught me a great deal. So thank you for that.
That's great. Well, you're most welcome. It was a pleasure, truly.
Yeah, you sort of took the words out of my mouth a little, Cal, which is great. The way you guys gelled with each other, especially A and B camera, was really special. I've been on shows where that hasn't been the case, and that's been a little like, because I feel like on set, what people don't know sometimes is there is a lot of eggshell treading. No matter which department you're in, there's always someone above you, and there's always someone where very often on sets you're like, we need to be a little cautious around this person or this person. You don't want to upset this person. You don't want to mess up this or do whatever. And I think that dissipated fairly quickly on our show, which is nice. Again, I'm just speaking for myself. Drew, I don't know about yourself, but it felt like every day we brushed away some more of those eggshells to the point where we got to this, like, we were a team. This is a full team. Like, nobody is more important than anybody else. Nobody was looking up or down at anybody. And we had this sort of unit together.
Yeah, I felt by the third episode, we were in the hospital in the third episode. I think we were
we were
kind of gelling at that point. I know Mike had reservations about my performance because I was a little rusty. And I remember I was talking about it like around episode seven, where he was reflecting back and he was really ill one day, but, you know, hanging in there by the monitors. And I just kind of took over. And because he wasn't there to do anything, I mean, so it's just the gaffer myself. And And he says, I remember thinking, oh, thank God Drew is back. Because I wasn't really kicking over in the beginning. I was just trying to feel it all out and just kind of get a sense of what the show was about and not doing the thing that he liked, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're obviously so talented, and the people at home obviously recognize that as well, because whether you see it or you don't see it, in fact, almost if you don't see it, it's better. If you're seeing something and you go, oh, that was cool, or it sends shivers up your spine, 9 times out of 10, that was camera work that made that happen, mm-hmm. because it's an angle or a fragrance that you've seen on the screen, which is you know, so fundamental to what we do. But it's so nice. God, can you imagine? I haven't been in my career long enough, but this is the dream, right? Is to have people who you work around who are so in love with what you do that they want to keep bringing you back.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's true. Really wonderful.
The thing too is I know we all are, you know, camera thunder is about the picture because it's a movie. But, you know, mm-hmm. there's so much more that goes into what is at the end. You know, I was reviewing I haven't really watched Shadowhunters since I worked on it, just seeing the show cut and, oh, why did you use that shot? And, you know, criticize it like that.
We think the same thing about our own performances, Drew. It's fine. We're like, oh, that shot? Why did you make that face? I don't know.
And somewhere, for some reason, the editor seemed to think it worked. That's why it's in there. He picks the gold stuff, the gold nuggets. And I guess I was sort of watching the show more as a fan now than as a technician, because so much time had elapsed, and and the visual effects were just astounding. And yes, they were, and that was a big part of the show as well. Mm-hmm. Very heavy visual effects. I sort of jumped in, you know, like when season 3 premiere, mid season leaving, and then mm-hmm. the season finale, the kind of thing to start up the last movie. The last episode, and that whole ring of fire and the demons, and we're just standing there, you know, that's mm-hmm. what we're doing. And I mean, the fire and the flame and everything's going, and the camera's going around. And I just remember doing that shot where everybody's a different height, and somehow I got to land on everybody before they're down here. Okay, we're up down here, and then we're back up for here, and then back. And just had to really keep that in my head.
Yeah, why didn't we fix that? That was such an easy, that's not even like a technical, we put everyone on Apple boxes, raise everyone up to Matt's height, and that's easy fix.
It's because they didn't notice, because Drew's so talented, he just fixed it before anyone noticed there's a problem.
I just walked into the shot and nobody noticed it at all. And, you know, you want to keep the actors' heights, because that's part of who they are, too. We know Emerald's a little shorter than Matt, and if we put her up to his height, well, it's just everybody, it's not going to work.
It's just a free-for-all.
Yeah, it would just not be, it would not feel right. There'd be something off. We're not sure what it is, but there's something weird about that shot. And you don't want to take the viewer out of it, you know, that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's, you know, it's that dance again that we all learn to do as we're working together for so long. And speaking of, that's something Dom and I talk a lot, obviously, about the fight scenes on the show and what it took to film those and from our perspective. But you were so amazing during every fight scene. You've done something I've never seen another camera operator do. You had an Apple box on wheels that you would put the handheld camera on your shoulder and just be able to run around on a lower level and be so mobile and so agile to be able to get around us and catch these little moments. I've never seen anything like it. So talk to us a little bit about that. And do you like shooting fight scenes? Is it fun for you? Is it stressful? What's your experience with that and sort of your point of view?
At times, it's all those things, because I do watch the rehearsal very closely to kind of get a sense of, you know, the timing of how many hits and punches. Well, we had swords and stuff. So extra room required at times to swing this thing. And I know the stunt people and the actors are aware of us, but sometimes you can lose that moment. Mm-hmm. But I still want to be safe. But it's a bit frightening. But it depends on the director. You kind of know what the style is going to be. You're going to have your wide shot, and it was always camera be moving. But the low Apple box thing, a lot of times I would just go in there and sit with no movement for a couple of shots. And then it was Tim, my dolly grip, who came up with this idea of just putting it on some casters and the old butt dolly. And and off I went, you know, on a little pad. And it was just, he didn't have to push me around. He would pull me, I guess, or he would help assist. But I could just be really mobile on my own to a certain degree. And it just kept that fluidity, and a lot of times the shot was bad getting in. It didn't matter to me, because you're gonna go somewhere else and almost be in that moment if it works. So I did, and it kept me out of the way of the swords, because they were high and I was kind of down low, so I kind of preferred being low.
It's true.
And they were like very tall men. It's such a brave job. They, because again, I don't think people realize I mean, you have your second peripheral vision, but very often that's closed, right? So you can see through the viewfinder unless you've got the screen. But then if you have the screen, you're looking down at the screen and not up necessarily at the action. You're trying to find, you know, these pieces. And there are these big, heavy swords, and we've spoken about it. You know, the warm days, the tip is bendy, so you can't stab anyone, but the edges of it are hot. If you get hit by them, they suck. Mm-hmm. They really suck. And then the cold days, that tip froze, and it was sharp. It ended up being very sharp.
Sword. Yeah.
It was a sword.
It was just a dulled blade at that point.
And an improvement from first season from the swords, I have to say.
No kidding. A huge improvement. We just spoke to John, locations manager.
Oh, yeah.
And he has my sword, my one that I used on the show, like still with the dinks
in
it.
It's on his wall.
It was like on his wall behind me. I was like, no way. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You had a little great keepsake. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are there any, this is sort of a two-part question. What was your favorite Seed of Shadowhunters to shoot? And what was the most difficult?
Mm.
If you can think of one.
Oh, you know, I was struggling with that question. I saw it. favorite scenes. I don't have a specific scene that's favorite. I preferred shooting in the Institute because there was a lot of room. Yeah. In there, and we could do a lot of different things in there and still have the same kind of, you know, background and still environment, mm-hmm. but still make feel it was different. Mm-hmm. I liked Magnus's apartment as well because of the rooms and the rooms and the rooms, and there was depth there, and you had a lot of fun with that too. So I can't really say per se there's a scene that's memorable because they were all fun in their own way, and they were all unique in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the biggest logistical thing that we had to do, and I don't think it made the movie. I don't think the scene got in there. And I was trying to look for that yesterday, but we were in the Institute Arboretum, which is actually a mm-hmm. location. It was Allen Gardens with a big dome, a greenhouse, and all the plants were inside. Usually it's, you know, dead of winter outside. Inside it's, you know, the Caribbean, and very humid and warm in there. And the director wanted to have a high angle shot. And when you look up in this dome, you see, oh yeah, there is a platform up there. But, you know, it looks, you know, it's plywood on, you know, suspended from the ceiling. And to get up there is, wow, I got to scale the wall with a ladder attached to it. And you have to have your working at heights permit to work anything over mm-hmm. 10 feet. And that was 30, 35 feet in the air. So, well, Mark, my assistant, and I, we had our tickets. So certainly we could get up there and get the shot for him. And that took us about 20 minutes or so just to climb up there. With mm-hmm. safety harnesses and doing your rigging and attaching as we went along. And then the guys go up there for maintenance all the time. It's no big deal. There's a heating unit or air conditioning unit up there they have to get access to. So when we finally made our way up there, and I was like, well, I'm exhausted now, just climbing the whole thing.
Right.
Now we got to drop a rope down that we brought up with us so they could hook up the gear equipment and we can, you know, lift it up to us. And get the shot, you know, tripod, because I'm looking down, don't want to hand hold it, mm-hmm. Fear if I drop it, and get it all up there and get it set, and, you know, clear out the sketches of the frame, and then the scene went on, but I don't recall ever seeing that done. I just remember seeing the image in the viewfinder.
No!
And that kind of work never really seems, you know, no one ever knows because they never see it, right? I mean, that was a lot of effort to get there for a scene that just didn't make the cut because it didn't advance the story. I didn't have time for it.
Goodness gracious. Ultimately, I mean, there's so many moments like that, though, that you really are in the trenches with us morning, noon, and night. We just rewatched the episode with all of the fluff flying through the air during the demon attack.
Oh, that was horrible. Yeah.
And I just always think about every time I show up to set and our entire camera crew is in, you know, hazmat suits and masks because they have to be in the thick of it with us. And we're all going, huh? But you were
like,
there.
Are we good? Are we sure this is going to be okay?
But again, it's so amazing to be able to have someone like you in the trenches with us because we can always count on you to get the shot. And we know you'll make it worth our while, even if we're in the worst of conditions.
Yeah, it was tough in there. I think the only person that had an advantage for being on set was Alan because he had a full mask on and he was sort of tied mask, up there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was nothing to him. And we were all like just coughing up pussy willows at lunchtime. It was just,
oh my God. Yeah. I was coughing them up for like 3 days. I was blowing mm-hmm. them out of my nose for like 3 days. It was absolutely horrendous. Never again.
Yeah.
I remember Mark cleaning up the camera at the end of the night, and it was just endless, a little vacuum in the air, mm-hmm. and it was just coming under all the crevices. I didn't know it had, you could get stuff in there. Oh, it was like, it was as bad as sand, it seemed to be.
I was just about to say, it's like sand. Yeah. You go to the beach with your backpack one time, that sand is never leaving your backpack, no matter what
never,
you do.
Ever.
See, but that's an interesting point. So you're talking about Mark cleaning up the camera. Again, I think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, but I think it's important to know with you, Drew, yourself. For audience members out there, these guys, you know, we do the fight scene stuff and you go, oh, that must have been a tough day. And they ask us about it very often at conventions and whatever, you know, was that a hard day or whatever? And you go, yeah, to an extent. You know, you do the emotional stuff that takes some stuff out of you. You do the physical stuff that takes some stuff out of you. You got to remember that Drew and his team got there an hour before us, and they don't leave till an hour after us. But for the audience out there, it's very important to remember that these guys do this incredible job, and they're carrying around. What does your camera weigh? 25 pounds?
No, it's upwards of in the mid 40s. That camera was
wow.
Probably at times close to 50, depending what kind of lens was on there.
Or lens, yeah.
Yeah.
Holy moly!
Yeah.
When
gets
we say
up
these
there.
Guys were in the trenches, they were really in the trenches. They worked harder than we did. They continue to work harder than we do always. They really are, and I've used this phrase before. I know I have. I don't want to sound like a broken record, but I will. They really are the unspoken heroes of our industry. Like, nothing gets done without them. And we get far too much credit for doing what we do when Drew and his team and John and his team and Glenn and his team and everyone behind the scenes put this together. We're just literally the tip of the iceberg that can be seen.
It's true.
But we're there to make you look good. That's our job.
And that's why they have to work so hard.
They have to make us look cool, Dom.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard work, man. It's hard work.
Yeah. But you guys rehearse those fight scenes, like, I mean, it's a week before, you know, getting it worked out, getting it down.
Sometimes.
That's still time and effort. And at the gym all the time, keeping in shape.
Yeah. On good episodes, we have a week. Some episodes, we have an hour. So it just depends.
Exactly. Okay. What's that move again?
That was one, again, actually, we've spoken about that day. But you not being here, and I feel like we should revisit it with you here.
Yes.
The fight scene on the rooftop with the angel and all the lightning is one that we, Kat and I, had to rehearse that day, as they changed everything and they changed the flooring and the scenario. So we had to re-rehearse the whole thing that day. And the one on the rooftop where I'm the demon.
Yeah, where you try to kill me.
Where I drop you off the edge. Where,
well, because that one, we had a time crunch.
Yeah, everyone was given new information. We were under a time crunch, and the credit for the both of those scenes goes to you and Glenn and your teams, because I remember that you had two tracking dollies at the same time, so you were trying to avoid each other whilst carrying the action as well, whilst dealing with this consistent strobing light that just blinded everybody. It was a nightmare.
That was
in the other scene, the one where you're trying to kill me, was Slick directing that episode? Or was he first AD? I can't remember.
He was first ADing.
He was his first AD. So I just remember Silic coming up to all four of us, you, me, Glenn, and Dom, and going, okay, guys.
For the audience, I don't want to interrupt, but for the listening audience back home, I just want to acknowledge that Kat very briefly forgot my name.
I did not.
I watched her pause over completely forgetting who I was. It was only 4 years. That's totally fine. Don't you worry.
Jace, Dom. Which one do I choose? But anyway, they came up to the four of us and said, we don't have any of the coverage yet, and we have 8 minutes, and that's all the time that we have. And this was, you know, a 2-3 minute fight scene. And they just said, are you guys okay to just roll through it a few times? And we all just sort of looked at each other and went, okay. And you two had handheld cameras. And again, trying to avoid each other, trying to avoid the action. And Dom and I are just duking it out over and over and over again. And I was so worried about how it was going to cut together. One of my favorite fight scenes that was cut together on the show. It turned out so beautifully.
Impeccable.
And it would not have been possible without you two. So hats
off.
That
was a season 2 event?
That was season 3. Because that's been,
I was the owl. It was season 3.
I have to say, a lot of it has gone. I was playing back some of the episodes. I thought it would jog my memory as to, you know, what had happened and behind the scenes stories. And man, I was pulling up blanks. I'm going, yeah. I know I shot that. I recognize the style.
Yeah. It happens to me all the time.
Happens to all
I've
of us.
I've done rewatches where I'm watching an episode and go, it looks like me, but I don't really remember being there. I don't remember doing any of this stuff.
No. There's full scenes where I go, I don't remember this scene existing, let alone I have no memories of shooting it. I don't. Mm-hmm. Was I there? Was this is there a clone? I don't know anymore.
I think it has to be to do with these, like, these 14-hour days that we fairly regularly pulled for 2.5-3 years, where there's only so much information you can take in and store. It has to be. That has to be the case. Mm-hmm. You know, there were so many times we were running on empty and just, you know, powered through because it's what we all love to do. But I am attributing it to that and not the drinking I do.
No, I don't think so. It's real life. You know, you don't remember what you do every day in real life. You know, even when you see a photograph, you go, oh, yeah, I remember taking that picture. It's just, you just don't recall that kind of detail. You kind of remember the moments where you get the feeling more than the actual event, I think.
I remember all of the cold days. I'll tell you that much. The outdoor cold days, I remember those.
Oh, but the best thing ever was building that alleyway inside for the winter, so we didn't have to be outside. I thought that was like a genius move.
Thank goodness,
Thank goodness Matt Hastings didn't like being out in the cold because it changed a lot of things for our show.
It really did. It sure did. That set was impressive, I have to say. Like the indoor look of it was really impressive. And there was a lot of logistics getting around that.
Yeah, because most of them were like functioning storefronts. You could go inside and like they were all... We play a game on the show, whether it was a set or on location. And I want to say that this is one of the ones that people won't... There's no way. There's no way you would know because we had a block either side of this. Like, there's no way you would know that this wasn't just a street in Toronto somewhere.
And it had three looks, I believe. It could be the Chinatown that we used a lot, and then just a residential neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the third look, I don't think we ever got to, which was supposed to be more of a downtown business environment, urban, more urban, I guess. But we never got to that look of it. But that was the plan to do that if it was needed.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow.
And that stayed there for quite a while afterwards. And that was another thing too about, you know, after everything had been torn down and I went back to that stage to do another show, it was...
No, you didn't. Did you really?
Yes, it was like right after...
Designated Survivor took over our stages.
It did. Wow. So the Oval Office was now where the Institute was.
Yeah, and the Institute became the Oval Office.
Yeah. And we sort of kept on that side of this. In stage one, we had two stages there, but stage two still had the old Shadowhunter sets were still standing because there was no need to move in there right away. They slowly kind of eroded them. Like I think Magnus's apartment finally got crushed away. But then I found parts of his apartment showing up in the design of the next set, you know, the brick wall and the brick textures in there.
Yeah.
The beautiful thing about recycling, because usually we're so wasteful in the film business that we could actually just get to reuse parts of the previous sets and blend it into this new environment. But I have to say, being in the Oval Office and being in that stage, and was I hearing the echoes of your voices, or is that just my head playing tricks on me? Or it was just really haunting and a little unsettling for the first little while.
I'm sure.
Mother's Day is coming, and mom doesn't want flowers. She wants a cocktail. Here's a hint. Get mom Bartesian. It's the countertop cocktail maker that creates your choice of over 60 premium cocktails in less than 30 seconds, each at the touch of a button. Flowers die. Happy hour comes back every day. So get mom the machine that makes amazing cocktails with real fruit juices and craft bitters. Best of all, get $50 off a Bartesian premium cocktail maker with the purchase of one pack of cocktail capsules. So, instead of getting mom a reason to fill a flower vase with water, get mom the easiest, fastest way to fill her glass with the floral notes of gin. The best cocktails are premium cocktails, and the best day to get it for mom is Mother's Day, because you can get $50 off now for a limited time. Visit bartesian.com/mother to get the best premium cocktail maker for mom at the best price for you. Bartesian, premium cocktails on demand.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Well, speaking of these sets that sort of stuck in our memory, do you have any favorite sort of behind the scenes moments, or is there anything that sort of sticks out to you as like, this was fun, I enjoyed this day or this moment or this whatever it was?
Well, the fun thing that we had was really nothing to do with the show in terms of being, it was Halloween in 2016. And we just sort of decided to get dressed up. And I had this idea, why don't we just sort of be, you know, dressed up as like the Star Trek crew? Me and my dolly grip and my focus puller all sort of got on the same page. And I ordered the costumes or the shirts anyways online about a month before. And I just left them in a box on the camera truck. I said, well, no one's going to bother this. Well, unknown to me was that B-camera Glenn spotted that box and opened it and realized, well, wait a second, these guys have got Star Trek costumes. So they had this idea that they were going to be the bad guys of Star Trek. And they, you know, found online, you know, Glenn made the best Wrath, the best Khan, Noonien Singh, you know, ever. It was like parallel to the movie.
Yeah.
The thing is, he never watches Star Trek. He doesn't really know anything about it. And, but he, you know, saw a picture and he could emulate that. And then Akira, his focus puller, was a Gorn. And Nicole, the second assistant, she was a Klingon, and the dolly grip was Spock from the Mirror Universe. And he was growing this goatee in, and I said, wait, a little change in the look is, oh yeah, just something different I'm trying. You know, this kept it oblivious to me as to what was going on. And then on the day, unfortunately, there was a Splinter second unit. So those guys were pushed off. They always did the second unit Splinter stuff. Yeah. So they weren't really on set, which was the plan, was sort of be this rivalry A and B camera, the good guys and the bad guys, and throwing appropriate insults back and forth to each other just for fun. But since that didn't work, we were shooting in the Institute office environment. I don't know if it was actually Alec's office or something else, because we tend to redress it for different areas of Alicante. And they came over in a march, and there's a video of them coming to our stage from their stage, and they're playing the classic, you know, Star Trek theme from the fight sequence, and that's in the background as the four of them sort of make their way into the set. And then when they came in, it was just mayhem. And and Glenn spouting off lines from the movie, and I said, "How did you know that?" Well, Akira gave me the lines, and I just said, "And this, you know, very Shakespearean moment, just, you know, like Carl Montemayor would have done." It was just shocking, and we were just all in shock. And Selig was going bananas. He says, "Everybody, get out of here! We're behind." You know, just classic first AD.
Of course,
and like that.
So much.
No time
fun.
For fun. We got to work.
Oh, yeah, so funny. And it was Kat and Matt were on that set at that moment there.
Yeah.
And then, and the boom operator, he just came in as Halloween too. He came in as the new updated Star Trek Spock with a different tunic, and he was the boom guy. But he's like 6'2", and he had the ears on, and he looked really convincing. Look for it. And then I think at one point we all got together, got a big shot with Kat and Matt there as well.
Perfect.
But it was a very memorable moment. And I have video from different angles and, you know, from pictures of us sitting there with on the dolly and all of our tunics and, you know, NCC 1701 on the side of the dolly to make it look like it's the Enterprise.
Oh,
and we just kind of played along with it for the day like that. So that was just sort of a highlight that I really do embellish.
We've touched on this already, but it was a very light set in general. It was a very, it was a very playful set. Even, was it Mike McMurray who had Fun Shirt Fridays?
Yep. Hawaiian Shirt Friday and Cat Hawaiian Shirt Thursday.
Shirt Fridays. Yeah, that sort of became a thing, and we were excited to see people showing up, because it does has this levity to it that makes everything, you know, nobody's dying here. Like we're making a TV show, we should be enjoying ourselves. That's the whole point. We should be having fun.
Yes, I was always amazed at how the two of you, you know, could be laughing and joking in 1 minute, and the slate goes in bank, and they're crying and weeping and just like, how do you do that? I just turn that on like that, and then the camera
crippling
cuts
debt, crippling debt from years of being an actor. I just think about that and it immediately turns on.
some light trauma and just use it. Just some light trauma. No, but it's a lot of it, and Dom and I talk about this so much on the show, but so much of the ability to do that comes from having a crew that creates that environment and allows for that. And once again, it's credit to you and Glenn and your crews for being able to set things up and be there and be there to catch the moment without taking us out of the moment. And that's such a skill that I don't think a lot of people realize is so important to shows like this that have such emotional ups and downs.
And a lot of it too is, you know, Mike is a well-humored gentleman, you know, and he likes to have fun. And it kind of starts there. If your director of photography is a little more formal and a little bit more precise and a little more, you know, or traditional, then you may have not had as much fun. But, you know, it came from you guys too, because when you're together, it is just you're in social mode pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes, as soon as it's time to rehearse, we're on to work mode. And you just got used to hitting that switch. That sometimes Daly would come in and then clowning around and be ready to go, oh, just a second, I need a second. And the roll in the camera slates in, and he's not quite there yet. You know, just, okay, I'm good now.
Yeah, you're right. That's such an interesting thing that I have to separate that from my real life every now and then. Like I was just at my buddy Grant's wedding over New Year's, and he's an AD, or he used to be an AD, now lives in the Dominican Republic. And he used to do this thing, used to drive me mental. And he would do something when we were out drinking together. He would do this thing where he would go, oh, yeah. And just for a second, my brain goes, what? Has someone called for us? What's going on? And then I go, I'm at a pub. Like, I know that this isn't what's happening right now, but he would just pretend to talk into a radio. And I'd be like, nobody's talking. Nobody's talking right now. But it sort of becomes this like semi instinctual part of your existence where you're like, oh, something's happening. You hear a clapper ball go off and you go, am I supposed to be there? And you snap into work mode.
Yeah. I was even doing it over at the holidays. I was home and my grandma was like, hey, can you mix up the mashed potatoes? And I went, yep, copy that. And I went,
that's, I didn't mean to say that.
Wrong. No, I don't. Just, okay.
You don't say copy that to your grandma, no.
Don't say copy that to my grandma. I don't know. She didn't take offense, thank goodness. But Well, I mean, 55 episodes and, you know, two seasons with you. So it was what, 42 episodes 42. Or something. And two seasons, you know, when it all came to an end, we had the opportunity to do the movie, the last two episodes, where we had a bit more freedom because there was no network notes. There was no, you know, we kind of had free reign. So what was that like for you? Did you feel as though you had a bit more freedom when we were doing that and you could try some things or, well, you know, coming
well, it was
back
Todd
and,
directing. So it was someone new to understand what he was looking for. Mm. But I guess it took us 4 weeks to shoot that or close to it, like 3.5 weeks or something. Mm-hmm. But Todd did he knew the style of the show. You know, he was one of the producers that were in the cutting room. And at one point, as I got into it doesn't really matter because we're not going to be on that shot that long because of the cutting pattern. He goes, oh, that's my fault. I set that up. It was you. And then I'm finding the guy in his society. Yeah, it's the cutting pattern was driven by Todd. And and it was like, you know, there's some nice shots in there. You could have hung on it for maybe, you know, a moment or two longer. You know, just that's all. You would see every single shot that we did for a scene. Yeah. It just wouldn't be there that long.
Yeah, that's true.
It was quick.
Well, you know, part of that is the efficiency of the crew. We were able to get so many shots. Mm-hmm. They probably
depend on the director.
Oh, well. Yes.
It would depend on the director. You're absolutely right. Certainly. It would fully depend. We're being so nice. Like, it's a POC. What are they going to do? Fire us? Like, the show's over. Who cares? We talk about this more honestly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They would entirely depend on the director. And very often, you guys in the first AD team, like, if a director came in and we were like, this is slowing us down. This is a real problem. Like, you know, because for those out there who don't know, if you have to add an additional day to filming TV or a movie, it costs a fortune. It costs them fortune to do. It costs so much money. You have to have all of the equipment, all of the crew, everyone comes in. If you're on location, God forbid, you have to get that location for another day. Mm-hmm. It costs an absolute fortune. And an additional day might be one scene. All you need to get is one scene, but you have to get everyone in for that day. It is an absolute nightmare. So when you do have directors who come in who slow everything down, we do have looks sort of between the internal sort of core group where you're like, we know what we're doing here. Like, we're going to get this done because we've got to power through things. And the crew around you fix that problem. you know?
Yeah, I remember an instance where we were in the alleyway and it was like the last moment. There's only like, you know, minutes left to do, you know, Dom's coverage, unfortunately. As the room turned around now, and all we have are these wide shots is what we're planning to do. And we're handheld at the time. And I think it's sort of the aftermath of a fight sequence. And it was, the wide shot's all we have. But I know on the other side, we have all these close-ups and you want to match when you're cutting just for the power of the emotion. So I just walk over to Don and I go, so, you know, when they say cut, just keep going, because I'm going to run in and just get closer to you to get your close-up. Mm-hmm. And that's what we did. Right. And that's just what we did. And it's in the movie.
It's in the movie.
Go home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is. We need heroes like that on set. No kidding. Like that's because without that, not even just like it takes so much of the impact out of the scene, but it kind of takes the scene away from the rest of the show as well. Mm-hmm. So it actually steals a huge amount, seemingly a fairly small mistake. But yeah, it's people like you who fix things like that on set. We talked about this with Glenn and then with John yesterday. So much of what being on set is quick problem solving, being able to see an issue and go, we can fix this quickly. I actually think that's so much of what it is. It's like, okay, here's the objective. How do we get there quickly and efficiently with everything, with every 1,000 notes ticked as well?
It's, yeah. Yeah. And then one more note at the end for take two.
Okay. Exactly.
One more thing. Sure. Got it.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's the beauty of working together for so long is being able to dance with that and adjust to those things and roll with those punches and know that whatever we do get, it'll work somehow. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, those are some of my favorite memories of doing those final two episodes, is having that family so solidified. And it was such a bittersweet moment.
It was. Mm-hmm. It was closure too, because at the end of the third season, we all thought we were coming back.
Yeah.
And then when I heard that was not coming back, it was like, I didn't get to say goodbye to anybody. It was just like, so long, we'll see you soon. Yeah. That was sort of the idea of it. And
because we were all sure, like the storylines were ready for season four. Matt and I were off spending our season three money. We were traveling around Europe. We got a phone call like, oh shit, mm-hmm. maybe we should cut a couple of dates off this tour. We're going to be unemployed soon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so true. But so it was nice to come back and have that closure. And I guess the scene that really resonates was one I did not photograph. I was just sort of by the monitors watching. It was a Steadicam scene. And then the two of you were doing your last dance and that whole dialogue and how that played. And I know for the fans, there's no real music on set when you're doing that. There's like this, what they call a beat track. But the beat track is like a really low frequency thunk, 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 thunk that you're dancing to, that you can record because the microphone doesn't actually pick up that frequency. So you're not damaging the soundtrack. Usually it's back in the day, it was you play the music for a few bars and then drop the music, microphones on, and everybody just keeps moving to the same vibe. Well, now we can actually keep beat going.
I didn't know that. Level. That's interesting.
The mic
That's
doesn't really pick it up. Cool. Fascinating. I know. I was always impressed with that. So you got this low kind of boom, boom that I can hear. And the camera slowly revolving around you as the steady cam is working its way around for the story. And just watching that whole scene unravel, it was rather emotional just being at the monitors watching it. And I remember that because I wasn't really working. I was just, you know, enjoying the scene. Watching
That's an interesting thing as well. You got to see so much of what got filmed. For us, what is quite interesting as a fan watching it back is there are scenes that we weren't in. We read them. Yeah. We know vaguely what happens in them, but getting to see like Harry and Matt's take on how this love connection is happening when we weren't there, especially getting to see Harry had such freedom to play with his physicality, getting to see what Harry did on the day. Because he, you know, Harry would walk in and go, oh, this is an interesting prop. Can I have this at the beginning? Or can I do this at the beginning? It's always something new. So that was a really interesting thing for us. But I agree with you at the ending. It is this bittersweet thing to film because when you know you're approaching the end, everything is the last one of something. Everything is is the last time we're seeing something or seeing a person or going into a room or seeing a set or, you know, whatever it is. But we also sort of had the bonus of our wrap party was directly after filming that. So slowly sort of people were closing things down, closing departments down, getting things done, whatever. And then trays of champagne were making their way out whilst Kat and I were dancing. I was like, it's fucking save us some because we'll be there very soon.
Yeah, we're crying right now. I'm going to need some champagne.
Sure. It was a very sweet, like I remember Cilic standing everyone up at the end and that being the, And ladies and gentlemen, that's it for Shadowhunters. And it being just the most like brutal, but we were all arm in arm. So I think Emrod has a really good video of it. We were all arm in arm, you know, 200 of us, like all together, like, fuck, look at what we achieved, man. 4 years of everyone trying to achieve one goal all together. 4 years of no real arguments. Nobody really fell out with each other. We just had this time that will always live in infamy for us because we managed to put it on film, which is really special.
It is. It's the family I have. Well, the big family that I never had because it's just me and my sister.
Right.
So yeah, it's just a large people. And you sit down to lunch. It's a room full of people sitting down to lunch, you know. And,
yeah.
And then we're all getting up and doing our thing. And there, you know, everybody checked. If you had an ego, it was checked at the door. It never got to set. You know, yeah. And that was fun.
Well, and that was the environment we had. It was very much an open door, round table, collaborative environment where whether it was, you know, just checking in about a scene or trying to figure out creatively how to make something work or checking in on someone on a personal level and going, hey, how are you? How's your life? Are you good? Are you, mm-hmm. you know, are you well, basically, mm-hmm. which you rarely, rarely get. And that's something I think on set has kind of been, at least the lunchroom, for example, has kind of been lost since COVID, really.
Yeah,
because there's so many protocols now and so many things that everyone has kept so separated. I haven't had that since Shadowhunters. And I miss that so much, just being able to sit with everyone and chat and check in and have birthdays and, you know, whatever event is going on. And it's, you know, I don't know, there's such a camaraderie about it that that will always live in infamy, at least in my heart with Shadowhunters.
Yeah, no, it's like the football scene in Top Gun where everybody is you know, bonding. That's our lunch is when we do that, right?
Yeah, for sure.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Well, on that note, Drew, is there anything else you would love to add or say, or, you know, we know the Shadow fam loves you just as we do. And it's been really, really incredible to have you here today.
Well, thank you very much. I know I could go on and on for hours about other things, and I just don't want to bore everybody. But it was certainly a lot of fun seeing you guys. And I can't believe it's over so quickly.
I know.
Because there was certainly a trepidation before starting. But, and you know, and my driver was late to pick me up. That's why I had to push everything.
Yeah. So, My chopper was late as well. We had some weather here. It was a whole nightmare.
Oh, wow. I walked. I don't know. No, but thank you so much, Drew. It was incredible to spend so many years working so closely with you and to be able to kind of relive that for at least a little bit. It's been a pleasure.
It has been a true pleasure, and the best of fortune to all of you.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care. Miss you.
Bye.
Return to the Shadows is hosted and executive produced by me, Dominic Sherwood, and Catherine McNamara. Our executive producer is Ling Lee. Our senior producers are Liz Hayes and Diego Tapia. Our producer is Hannah Harris and Kristen Vermilia. And our intern is Sam Katz. Original music by Alex Kinsey, performed by Alex Kinsey and Catherine McNamara. And the episode was mixed by Seth Alansky.
A lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.